for sure. But that's actually something, yeah, we're talking about in a minute about how it informs your adult practice. But yes, yeah, so I would watch my tone. I had another little child who, with the Play-Doh, a box that they would put all their things in that they would then leave in the therapy room, and when they'd finished therapy they could take that box away with them. So all the creative stuff they did stayed in that box in that room. And then this one little person loved the Play-Doh but would take the whole lot out of the one tub and join it to the whole lot from it. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you're using all the Play-Doh. You need little bits because the budget's not going to stretch to every time. You're using all of it now that you're... I'd take that to supervision. I thought, I don't know what to do. What do I do? And that was all about, yeah, his little world that, you know, everything. He just wanted more and more of everything and of everything, because there was a lot of deprivation and so on. So it was working with that. And I just had to try very hard to encourage him to maybe, oh, I see you on a lot of Play-Doh. maybe, shall we just take a bit? Because we just need to think about other children who might also want to play with the Play-Doh. So let's maybe take a little bit. But if you want more, then of course we can get some more. But let's start off with a little bit first. What does that feel sound like for you? And actually, interestingly, over time, he did start taking less and less. Still. More than he should have. But yeah, so it's not actually always clear cut. Like anything really in the counselling room, is sometimes they're tricky situations, and that's really sort of the next point here, and that your supervision is paramount. As you all know, you have supervision yourselves. And I would suggest in supervision work with a supervisor who has experience of working with children, of course, and has some understanding of child psychology and how they may tick. So, yeah, any questions, go to supervision and, you know, your networking. Talk to other therapists who are working with children. Bounce ideas off each other. Sometimes it does feel like the blind leading the blind, but I then always come back to, I'm person-centered and I understand the other theoretical approaches and modalities here. So for me, I always just come back to the core conditions and try and stick with that, and so stay with the client offering those core conditions and just hope sometimes. I did want to bring up the idea of touch. Because with children especially, it's very, very hard sometimes not to instinctively want to hug them or walk with your arm around them, or little ones want to hold your hand. I'll just go back to the one model of place to be as one example. They have a no-touch policy. And that is because, again, keeping the child safe, keeping you safe. But I found that quite hard. So for instance, there was one little lad, every time I appeared at the classroom door to get him, he would jump up and he'd fling himself across the classroom and put his arms around me and hug me. And that was very lovely for me, because I thought, oh, thank God, at least he likes me. It was starting somewhere. But I was told I'm not meant to allow that to be happening. And to be honest, a lot of it still I grapple with a bit. So I can understand the principles behind it, but it still doesn't sit that well with me. So I was taught I had to just sort of, oh, hello, and sort of not push him off me, pull him off me, but try to extract him without rejecting. So, and that's quite hard to do. And so I had a little girl when I was in the playground, she just wanted to walk around with me holding my hand. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with that? Yeah, it's better that you don't. So, well, how do I stop her holding my hand without rejecting her then? And it was a case of, well, just fiddle for something in your pocket or be holding something. So you're sort of naturally moving your hand away without. upsetting the kid. So it's a tricky one for me, but I think the point I'm making is just be aware. Especially, it gets a lot more tricky, you know, with older children. You don't want to be accused of anything. So you've got to keep yourself safe. And you've got to look out for the kids. Some children, of course, may be inappropriately touched. They may be being abused. So you don't want to be touching them. Same with an adult. If they make the move, maybe, if they reach to hug you when they leave, then that's fine, return the hug, but you wouldn't automatically hug them because you just don't know what their experience of touch might be. I sort of think, just as I've written there, ask yourself, the physical contact that you're having, is it necessary? Is it appropriate? And is it reasonable? If you're hugging a kid or if you're touching them, who are you doing that for? Is it just because for you it's your instinct to do that? Or is it beneficial to the child? And I think for me, I just have one basic principle with children, but with all my clients, is I think, okay, if I were to have to give evidence in court, or if I had to stand up in front of the BACP, would I be able to explain my way of working? And yes, something may go wrong and I may get myself in trouble, but if I've tried to think things through, be aware of what I'm doing, can I justify why I decided to take this step and that step or that action or do this, then I know I'm working as ethically and professionally as possible. So I find it a bit of a tricky one.
It is difficult, isn't it? Because it's okay having an adult in the room crying and sobbing.
Yes.
But having a child crying and sobbing and not wanting to, crikey, that's difficult.
It's very difficult. So yeah, I would just, as I say, suggest just be aware, think of what your own views are around touch, and keep yourself safe as much as the children.
Okay.
We're running out of time, so I just want to quickly move on to the informing of adult practice, and that's why I think knowing a bit about working with children is fantastic for working with adults. So I've just put down a few of the things that I found really from my experience. So adults become adept at protecting themselves and they've mastered deflecting pain and thoughts and feelings that don't feel good. And so can often be very disassociated from what's going on inside them. And as I mentioned before, this concept of the wounded child or the inner child or the real self or whatever your, you know, theoretical approach likes to call it. The more I work with adult clients, the more I just believe in this concept of that internal child who's been hurt, who wasn't acknowledged for the pain, the sadness, the distress, the trauma, who wasn't loved, who wasn't nurtured. And you have an adult sitting in front of you saying, I don't know why I'm feeling sad or depressed. I've had depressive episodes all my life. Or I don't know why I'm in a constant state of anxiety. Or they've learned not to trust their feelings. Because whenever they've had a thought, no one said, are you sad? It's okay to be sad. Or you're angry. I know you're angry and it's feeling that way, but just don't behave that way. Or you're feeling really lonely. What's that like for you? Come talk to me about it. So they grow up just repressing everything, but it stays there. And so manifests either with physical symptoms and or the stress, depression, anxiety. So almost if you go back, help them to go back and look at episodes and things that have happened, or how they were interacted with, how their primary caregivers interacted with them, and help them to understand what happened And so process it and integrate that into their experience, and so start to recognize where those really awful, difficult feelings are coming from. So in that way, if you can recognize that there's a child there, you go back as your adult self who's mature, who's not as vulnerable as that little child anymore, go back, almost heal your child. Then, as an adult, you're healing yourself at the same time. So, as a concept, I like it. Some therapists don't, so it's up to you how you see that. But for me personally, it's just more and more I just get these clients and you start looking. What can be very helpful, actually, to help unlock things for a client is to give them a life graph. So they just chart their lives. So you're nodding, some of you, so you've done that with clients and you found it helpful?
Yes, very.
Yeah. So you just, they can plot their, if you haven't heard of what a life graph is, they just have pan out their years, however old they are, say they're 30, and to just have a look at good and bad things that happened in their lives, and they'll go back and think, oh, that happened. Gosh, I didn't realize it impacted me so much. And so what happened around that time? So it's a good talking point. It really opens them up and gives them a perspective. Because a lot of clients also will say, I don't know what's wrong with me. I mean, I can't say my life was that bad. I mean, there are other people around me who are so much more worse off. They've had this happen and that. So why? I don't have a right to feel this way. But of course, they do, and they don't understand until maybe they really start to look back at events and incidents like that. So that's a good thing to do. Any other things that you'd like to add there? I'm just conscious of time for some people. What would you say, in what way do you think having anything to do with children can help? Another thing for me, personally, patience. I'm the most impatient person on the planet. And it's like I can see that pattern. I can see where this all stems from. Which you can't say that because it must unfold for them in their own. And so with a child, of course, you can't hurry them. You've got to stay with what they're doing. And you've got to be comfortable with the not knowing and the not rushing and so on. And so that's taught me a lot with adults. Don't just stay alongside, just be patient. When they instinctively know they feel safe enough or strong enough to be able to look at something, then they will. But I, as a therapist, it's not my job to point things out in that way. So it's taught me patience.
And consistency. Always being the same, no matter what.
That's a great point.
Now, I mean, I've got one young man who I've been seeing for, oh gosh, I don't know, 18 months. And we've had a bit of a break recently. He didn't really want to come and he was doing something different. And it was year 10. And he came to see me on Thursday, the first time for a long, long time. And I was just the same, didn't question where he'd been, what he'd been doing. And he blurted out the whole thing that had been the problem, you know, a huge disclosure about some sexual abuse, which I kind of knew about in a roundabout way, but I was waiting for him to tell me, that happened when he was 7, and he's 14 now, so, and it took me only two years to get to that.
Wow.
And I said, I said, I'm wondering how you're feeling right now, having told me that. He says, I just feel relieved. He says, I never could. It just came out. I don't know why it came out today, but it just came out today. But because he hadn't been to see me, I could easily have taken him off my caseload. And that day he came to see me, I said, well, look, I'm sorry. I can't see you today. I haven't done it. But I'm so glad, you know, I didn't. And being consistent and the same, and no matter what they throw at you or say to you or however colourful it might be.
Right. So for you, consistency is key there. Yeah.
Always being saying every day something, well, it didn't go well last time, start again, be the same person, no matter what. Usually they come, as you've said, come from such chaotic backgrounds, yeah. And everybody's up and down and up and down, and they don't know how what reaction or what they're going home to, what's going to happen.
Yes.
So for me, just being the same all the time.
Yeah, very valuable point that. Mm. Thank you for sharing that.
I think for me though, it's made me realise that actually, I think you do really need to be specialised and trained to specifically work with you. I know I could not do that. I couldn't. I haven't got the patience. I just don't feel that I could. Therapy would be too hard. I want to be hands-on, cuddling, or there. Let's make it better. I want to take them home and rescue them and all of that. For me, it would be so difficult.
It's extremely rewarding. Yeah. It really is. And I think the rewards you get from dealing with young people, I mean, I'm not so good with the infants, I must say, but certainly probably key stage 2, 3 and 4, it is rewarding because you can it's that point in life when you can possibly make a difference before adulthood.
Yes, exactly.
You might not, you may never do, but you may be that one person in their life, in their school life, in their early years, and they remember and you have an impact. And it's quite that's very rewarding.
Hard work.
Yeah. You can learn the patience. I'm exactly the same. I really felt that when you said you're the least patient person in the world. That's But you know, if you have to do it, you can do it, and you know, anybody can learn. If I can learn it, then anybody
absolutely.
Can.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's almost a career choice to work with
it
that
is,
sort of. Just you know me, I absolute respect to anybody that does it.
And I think that's really important to be aware of where your comfort zone lies, so that you can offer the best service to that vulnerable person in front of you.
And they're not your own children. At the end of the day, they are not
your
children.
Yeah, good
and
point.
There is a very different, you have a very different relationship with them when they are not yours.
Mm. Yes.
It is not yours. They are not your responsibility.
Yes.
They are not your children. And when your session ends, you end.
Mm.
You're not the you're not the parent. It's not like having your own.
Yes.
You've got to go, look at you.
Yeah,
it's totally
it
different.
It is, yes.
I think that's where
it's good to be mindful of that.
Yeah, they're not yours. So actually,
it is quite frustrating though when you know that they're not yours and you know what home background they're going to.
Oh yeah.
I have a child in my class, and I work in a special school, and he is autistic, and he comes to school with a massive, really distended belly because he can't poo, and he eats crap. When he eats school dinner, he'll pick at it, smell it, and put it down. And we have to feed him biscuits that he likes, like cheese crackers and digestive biscuits, and he'll eat them. Well, what is that? That is all like white food product, you know.
Yeah.
It's just gonna build up and build up, and on top of that, he's drinking Movicol.
Yeah.
You know, 4 sachets a day. We have to make him drink Movicol on top of it. It's not doing anything. It's not moving anything. And every weekend he comes back, and his stomach's bigger than, you know, because we know that. He is neglected in his family.
Yeah.
And he'll come into school, he wears nappies, he's 10 years old.
Oh,
he'll come into school and he's had old, being graphic, old poo down his legs where he's not been cleaned, and it's seepage because his belly is so distended.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his family who just let him be in the house.
So where are social services, Robbie?
That's what our frustration is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because he's moved from one side of the city to the other, he now comes under Derbyshire County rather than our Nottingham City County. And he's not going to be picked up. He's going to be one of those that you'll fall through the net and you'll hear about in the newspaper.
Oh.
You know, that's what it will be.
And I think I appreciate you sharing that, and again, that's where your supervision comes in. You want to fix, you want to save, but unfortunately these children are going back to an environment that you can't change for them. So that's why you're working with them to facilitate their own empowerment, but there's only so much sometimes you can do. Just one last point that it's helped me with is silence. I'm also not brilliant with silence, but with children, they don't have that social awareness. They're not bothered if you're not saying something. They're just playing away and doing their thing. They don't need you to fill in the gaps for them. So that's helped inform my adult work as well. Just stop butting in, Stephanie. Let them be quiet and think. So, yes. All right, I'm mindful of the time, because I know a couple of people have to go, and I've pretty much covered what I need to. And as I say, we could go on forever, really, but I'm sure you're all quite tired. Books help. I've put on some examples of little books that kids quite like, some recommended reading, some references. If I could please ask you, just before you go, I'd really appreciate you filling out the evaluation form for me. You don't obviously have to put your names on. But thank you very much. I've had a fabulous afternoon with you. And good luck. Carry on. Go out and save the world.